Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined around the mic by Mari Garza and Cheryl Lindemann. Hey, ladies.
Hello.
How's it going?
Happy summer.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Right in the middle of it.
It's stuffy some days. It's cold inside some days. It's a trip.
Yep.
Definitely summer. So we are taking time to talk about food because we always think we want to talk about food. We think of food books. It's something we enjoy. So that's kind of where we're starting today.
Definitely. Perfect timing for summer with all the different summer foods out, farmers markets starting to get vegetables, berries coming into season.
Ice cream season.
Yes, ice cream season. Absolutely.
Honestly, I could do ice cream year round, but it is ice cream season.
Yes, definitely. Gives me an excuse to talk about cookbooks, which I usually like to talk about on the podcast. And I'd probably get started with one then.
Okay.
Actually, a cookbook from this year. My struggle this year has been reading books that are coming out this year. I feel like I'm stuck in last year, and this one's actually 2022.
So many good books, though. What can you do?
Yeah, there are. There were so many. And frankly, honestly, there was so much publishing last year that things that fell into last year. There was sort of almost an overabundance that we didn't
very
get
much,
to.
Very much.
Yeah. So this is a book from 2022. It is called Arabia by Reem Asil, Recipes from the Life of an Arab in Diaspora. And this is an absolutely vibrant cookbook, just gorgeous. Just gorgeous all the way through. It has a lot of text. There's a lot of narrative about Reem Asil's life, about her upbringing in California and out east. And she is Palestinian and Syrian. And a lot of the book goes back and pieces together the history of her grandparents, who were Palestinians who had an orange farm and then ended up having to flee as refugees to Lebanon, and then had to flee yet again, 7 times throughout their history to the United States. And she pieces together the story that her grandma did not really want to talk about much, but she ends up piecing it together, and it's a large piece of text in the beginning of the book to explain that. And it really focuses on Reem Asil's journey as someone discovering her food culture, really appreciating it, appreciating her history, and really being a community activist in California, working a lot with community organizing, with helping people get jobs that actually can help support their lives. And then her journey becoming a chef and a bakery and restaurant owner. She owns Reem's, or she was the founder of Reem's California, a bakery that serves traditional foods. And just a gorgeous cookbook. And I wanted to, for this one, I didn't have anything prepared. I just wanted to flip to a page and say what comes up. So this one is pistachio cardamom sticky buns.
And it's that just sounds lovely right there.
It does, with a good cup of coffee. Nice.
Yes, absolutely. So in an interesting turn of events, I love book serendipity. We talk about this a little bit. When these things happen, you're reading one book. And I had my next book ties into this book, because in this cookbook, at one point she has a really low point in her life, and she goes to stay with her aunt, who's this very nurturing person, and they end up cooking through some cookbooks, and just cooking becomes a sort of healing thing for her. And she cooks through Deborah Madison's Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone, which brings me to my next book, which is An Onion in My Pocket: My Life with Vegetables by Deborah Madison. And I had actually read Deborah Madison's book first and then picked up Arabia. So it was just such an interesting combination of books. But Deborah Madison is a cookbook author. She's written 14 cookbooks. She's the founder of the Greens restaurant that overlooks the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. She spent over 20 years in San Francisco in a Zen monastery and then went on to become, I kind of think of her like a vegetarian guru. I don't know if she necessarily loves that, because she really branches out into, everybody pins her as just this vegetarian person, but she actually eats some meat. She especially likes locally and ethically sourced meats. She's sort of fundamental in the local food movement. She was very active with Shea Panisse, Alice Waters. The poet Jane Hirschfield worked with her. I mean, it's just a really neat story of sort of counterculture, San Francisco, and food, and that discovery of, you know, who you are, you know, so sort of through food. Food has been that thread in her life. So, An Onion in My Pocket, My Life with Vegetables by Deborah Madison. All right.
Sounds okay. Lovely. Marty, what you got?
All right. So I have The Ice Cream Machine by Adam Rubin. And if I may quote Jeff Kinney, who is the author of Diary of Wimpy Kid series, he says, this is three scoops of humor with adventure on top. So Adam Rubin first came on my radar years ago when I discovered the Dragons Love Tacos book. And of course, in that book, he explores a very intense love of tacos that dragons have. And then, of course, the explosive drama that happens if you give them a little, too much spice, too much habanero, too much Frank's Red Hot or Cholula sauce, you name it. But anyway, back to The Ice Cream Machine. This is actually Adam Rubin's first middle grade book. Mm-hmm. And it is cool. It is really cool. It's actually a collection of short stories, six short stories. And they all have the same title, but thankfully there is a subtitle that helps you keep them straight. So they're all called The Ice Cream Machine. And then there's the one with the ice cream eating contest, or there's the one with the evil ice cream man. So, yeah, that's like the subtitle in parentheses in all of them. And my favorite one was the one with the five-armed robot. So let me just say that this is like a really fantastical sort of zany book, like lots of fun. There's a kid, his name is Shiro. And he's got a babysitter robot whose name is Kelly. And, I imagine that these two are trying to fill their summer days, by going off on adventures throughout the week. Shiro is kind of the son of a professor who is the founder and CEO of what is called the Hanayama Robotics Corporation, and this is set in the future. So it's in Los Angeles, and poor Professor Hanayama doesn't have enough time to connect with her child, so she's invented Kelly, the babysitter robot, to sort of keep Shiro company and make sure that he doesn't get into crazy problems. But anyway, they are traipsing all over the world on the search for ice cream. And what I really liked about this particular short story is that, Mr. Rubin really kind of explores all aspects of ice cream. And in this particular story, he, goes to different parts of the world and, explores what ice cream is like. So I got to learn, I've heard about gelato, obviously. I did not know about an Indian dessert called, I think it's called kulfi. There's a Turkish chewy type of ice cream called dandurama. Never heard of that. Of course, he talks about paletas, which are, common in Mexico and other Latin American places. Helado de guindon. Now, that was a real new one for me. That is prune-flavored ice cream. Can't quite picture it yet, but that is common in Peru and other, South American areas. I really feel like this is a very meaty title. There's 351 pages to it. And like I said, six different short stories, all with their own version of zaniness and craziness in there. And what is really cool about it is that there are, unique illustrators. Daniel Sally Mary, who illustrated the Dragons Love Tacos set, he's in there, and other illustrators. So there's something in there, I think, for every child. And I think of this as like something to read maybe over a period of 3 or 4 weeks, because the stories are pretty long. And you really get a chance to dive in. One of the best parts of the book is that Mr. Rubin ends with a challenge to kids who are writers. Write the seventh story. You Very explore cool. what ice cream oh. means to you and how nice. Crazy and loving you loving feelings that you might have for it. And then he actually gives a mailing address. Which is sort of uncommon. I would have thought he would have said, email it to my publisher or something. But he lists a post office box for you to send, for the child to send the story if you so choose. It's really cute. Really cute awesome. Story. I loved it.
Okay. Well, I've got two. And this is one of those, there's been an abundance of stories that have come out in 2021, and there's still a lot of material being sort of the stuff that got pushed out of 20 and all the stuff that came in. And things have gotten a bit confusing on occasion. So I want to talk about a book called Chef's Kiss. There are two of them. They came out within a month of each other. The first one I want to talk about is a workplace romance called Chef's Kiss. It's by TJ Alexander. Slow burn, romantic comedy, just sort of hits all the right notes. It's funny, really heart-wrenching at times. It's set in the culinary world. Mouth-watering food descriptions. It's great. Simone Larkspur is an uptight perfectionist pastry chef. She thought she was in the job of her dreams, but the job of her dreams is sort of changing around her. She's working for a magazine. Magazine companies in the culinary world have not been doing fabulous. Her publisher has decided they want to go a different direction, so they're asking her to now do videos. She is not a video person. Add to that, she now has a new kitchen manager where she is sort of that grumpy person. Ray is absolutely a ray of sunshine and happy and outgoing, and where Simone is not. But needless to say, given enough time, they would make a very interesting couple. The workplace drama really begins, actually, when Ray comes out as non-binary. And it's really very mixed reactions. And it puts Simone's back up when people start misgendering or talking down to or talking around Ray. And she has to sort of figure out where she stands and whether she's gonna stay firmly in Ray's corner no matter what it means for her career. But it was a slow start. They really have to get to know each other, but it's also great, kind of fun inside the culinary world look, with some Food Network style things in the background and some, you know, the magazine world stuff in the background. It was a fun read, so I would highly recommend it. The other one, also called Chef's Kiss, by Jarrett Melendez, was a first-time graphic novel. This is actually a sweet new, it's queer new adult story. You've got a writing major. Ben Cook has done everything he's supposed to do, but after graduation, he can't find a job. He's trying it. He just keeps doing everything. He doesn't have, it's that whole, yes, you did everything right, but you don't have any experience. And we need somebody with experience. So he's getting desperate, and he's looking for something, and he sees a sign in a restaurant that says no experience necessary. Mm-hmm. And he's actually a successful home cook. He does kind of know what he's doing. So he finds this is something he really enjoys, even though he keeps getting challenged by the owner. The owner does not want to hire him, but he keeps giving him challenges. And he's also falling for one of the sous chefs. And so there's that whole side thing going on. And he's lying to his parents because his parents want him to be using his degree properly. Mm-hmm. So you just have a lot going on. Plus, there is a pig. You have to go look at this. It is hilarious. The pig edition is nuts. But really, this pig has the power to make or break his career. So you just need to go check it out to see what's going on. That's Chef's Kiss by Jarrett Melendez.
That sounds fun. Definitely. Well, I just read recently, and our listeners may have seen this too, that the 2022 James Beard Cookbook Awards are announced. And so the Cookbook Awards are presented to books published in 2020 and 2021. That's the criteria for these. So it brings us back a little bit, and actually brings me back. I won't talk about it much, but I did want to mention that one of the awards for international cookbook, for international cooking, is actually a book that we talked about on the podcast before. It was one of my favorite books from last year, In Bibi's Kitchen, The Recipes and Stories of Grandmothers from the 8 African Countries that Touched the Indian Ocean. I think that was one of my last books from last year that I talked about. And I absolutely love this book, and I was so happy to see it honored. It's beautiful and just wonderful. I remember when I read it, I thought, God, this has to win an award, you know, and it did. So another book from last year that I didn't get to that did win an award is Global Recipes for Modern Health, Everyone's Table by Gregory Gaudet with J.J. Good. And this one is a Top Chef star. In the book, he talks about his struggle and his journey through to become sober. And as part of that process, health became a really big focus for him, and changing his diet completely. And he actually adopted, he does mention paleo, but essentially it's a paleo diet, extremely rich in fruits and vegetables and spices. And not only is it, you know, gluten, dairy, soy, legume, and grain free, but it also is reflective of his Haitian upbringing, his French culinary education, and his great affection for the cuisines of Asia and Africa. So it's this really big fusion cuisine. Mm-hmm. Again, vibrant was the word I used for the last cookbook, and I feel that same way about this one. It's bright and vibrant and a bit gourmet, I would say, for sure. Some of the recipes, just really appealing. This one, crunchy cucumber salad with chili, sesame, and cilantro.
Okay, it's very, sounds very pretty.
Good. Yeah, it's gorgeous and bright, and it just, like, you already feel healthier just looking at it. I mean, seriously. Now, this one is very cool, and I was like, tortilla, I can't have it. No, it's a Spanish tortilla. Spanish tortilla with melted leeks and pimento aioli. So it's dairy-free, and it's just that beautiful egg dish. Just looks wonderful. Spiced carrot pumpkin muffins, and for the gluten-free person to be able to eat something like that, I think would be really wonderful. Then there's this huge section on, this one's about sauerkraut, making your own sauerkraut, spice blends, which are really wonderful, and sauces, and, you know, garnishes and that sort of thing, which I think is really, really neat, especially if you do have food sensitivities. You're really looking for things. I do. So I know for me and some of our listeners, you're really looking for trying to dress up things with strong flavors. And really antioxidant-rich ingredients. So just a vibrant, wonderful cookbook. Everyone's Table.
Okay. So I do have two nonfiction titles, but I'll just talk about the one that I've wanted to read for a while. It's Do Lizards Eat Ice Cream? How Animals Beat the Heat. This is by Etta Kaner, and it was published in 2020, and this is actually a nonfiction title. It's very cheeky. It's really funny in that it's like a picture book, and they're very short spreads, but, you know, the author poses questions. Do lizards eat ice cream to beat the heat? No, is on the opposite page. And then she gives an explanation of what, you know, certain types of animals will do to sort of cool down. So the shovel-snouted lizard actually dances to cool down. And when I read it, it's like, yes, dance. After racing around on the burning sand looking for food, they stop to dance. The lizard lifts up its front foot, picture this, and opposite back foot at the same time. Then it switches to the other 2 feet, the way air gets underneath to cool the feet. So,
like a horse prancing?
I kind of thought, like, is this really nonfiction or is this like a goofy something other? But I looked it up. You can actually see some images online of the this particular type of lizard, like doing the shifting to try to keep cool. In my mind, I'm like, maybe their feet are burning. I don't know. But it was just a really interesting book. So she goes through koalas. I mean, do they run through sprinklers? No, they actually cling to branches because their underbelly is a little not as thick, so they can keep cool that way. Do sea stars, and I'm thinking of like starfish, do they drink a lot of water? Well, actually, yes, because they wash up on the beach and the sun is drying them out and they're trying and they're waiting for that, you know, tide to take them back out. But in the meantime, they're holding on and continuing to live that way by having all that water. So it's just a really neat book. I had heard of this title and had thought about it for this podcast, and I just wanted to explore it again. This author also has another title in our system called Do Frogs Drink Hot Chocolate? How Animals Keep Warm, also by Etta Kaner. And it's the same type of a book, where just very short spreads, really cute. Really cute.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, my last one. So I went to the ALA conference this past, within the last couple of weeks, and had the pleasure of meeting Chef Andre Rush. I don't know if you know who he is. I think a number of people would recognize him. He went viral while he was working different events on the White House lawn. He was a chef for three or four presidents. And he just recently wrote a memoir called Call Me Chef, Damn It. And it is, it's his journey from a gigantic family, not well off, but okay, in rural Mississippi. He was huge as a kid. He was just solid. He figured out fairly quickly that he could take a punch and just not go down. But he didn't really want to be. He just wanted to be in the corner. He didn't want to be the center of attention. He just was the quiet kid in the room. But because he was so big and so strong, he just got challenged a lot. He is now, he is a veteran. He served, he was actually in the service already and actually exercising at the Pentagon on September 11th. He went into active service at that point. He had been in the Chef Corps. He's just, it's just a fascinating story from where he started from to where he is now. He is a public speaker. He is dealing for the, you know, for this book, he's actually talking about his own problems and issues with PTSD. He is, one of the things he's known in social media for is he does 2,200 push-ups every day.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
So if you see a picture of this gentleman, he has 20, he has like, and honestly, God, see him in person, he's huge. He's 24-inch biceps. And it's in recognition of the men who die every day, not having not been able to deal with or not dealing with or you know, just dealing with PTSD and suicide. So he's has a lot of great messages. He is really, he obviously really got into food. He's talking about this giant Mississippi family that's really in that story in itself, as the genealogist me finds that story in itself. He was the youngest, I want to say, I don't even know how many children, but he's like, there's only one younger than him. His parents weren't married. There's at least 10, but I think there's more than that. But he's like going into middle school or high school, and it must have been high school, talking with somebody in his class, and the guy is like describing this family, and he's like, wait a minute, who is your grandfather? And the guy, he's like, this guy's my grandfather. That's my dad.
Oh,
So, I mean, this guy who is exactly his age, he's called him uncle for the rest of their time together in high school because that's what he was.
Whoa.
I mean, there's that big of a gap between the children. Yeah. I mean, I think there was a 10-year gap between him and the next child.
There's some of that in my family, so yeah.
So it's that, and there's some of that in my family too, but it's not as, well, no, that part of my family is kind of big, but his family's bigger, and it's just he and his sister Thomasina are the youngest of the bunch, so it's, just, and he really did sort of, he describes his father as almost presenting as a grandfather as he was raising them too, because he's older and wizened but he saw a spark in Andre and they pushed him to succeed, and he has beautifully. So it's awesome. Really interesting story.
Sounds really good.
And he's really impressive in person. He's just huge.
It's so cool.
It's a fun read.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I do have one more title, another kid's title.
Cool.
This last one is called 10-Minute Kitchen Science Projects, and it is by Elsie Olson. It's actually part of a series by Capstone Publishing, 10-Minute Maker Series. There's, I don't know, something like 14 different books. But this particular one, the reason it appealed to me is because there is a recipe in here for ice cream. And you know that this recipe is kind of like everywhere. It's very simple. It involves Ziploc bags and ice and salt. And the reason why this series really appealed to me is because it's very much like that, I don't know if you really call it computational thinking, but that idea of looking at something you want to do, a project, and then coming up with the steps. And I think it's just a really great example for kids to see these, you have an idea, let's think about what the steps would be to get there.
Yeah.
So I really like this book. They might not necessarily be true 10-minute projects, but they are definitely accessible for families. Moms and dads, caregivers can work with a child to, gather the things needed. And the other thing I want to mention about this book is that not all the projects in here are edible. The ice cream one looked really cute. And I just want to promote this series. There are other titles in our system with 10-minute kitchen science projects. I think it's a really great STEM focused way to look at, solving problems or coming up with projects.
Yeah, that's
very
awesome.
Cool. A lot of neat books.
Yeah.
And so many more out there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It was hard to choose just these.
Yeah.
As usual.
Well, lovely talking to you both.
Okay.
Yes. See you next time.
All right.
Very cool.